Hello out there, and welcome to RSB. I'm Kel Fritzy. If you hear noise in the background, it's because we're having torrential rain and thunderstorms. Oh, and as well, if I all of a sudden disappear, it's because we lost power. Yeah, the lights have been flickering around here for a bit. Oh, hang on one sec. Sorry about that. There, all better. Forgot to put my teeth in. Anyway, yeah, so the lights have been flickering, so I don't know if we're going to be without power or what. It's also not going to be a long show. I'm still not feeling very, very good at all, in fact. Let me see. I've been awake since 7:30 last night, and it is 2 p.m. Eastern time now, so you guys can do the math. And I explained in quite a bit of detail as to what was going on with me on my evening show on Tuesdays, the IAW show, heard on Global Patriot Radio, as heard on Blog Talk Radio. And I'm just having a real tough go with this edema. Yeah, it's not giving up at all. In fact, it's getting worse. And I got these pills. They don't seem to be doing anything. But there are other issues going on as well. If you want to know what's going on, go to the IAW show. I'm not going to repeat it all here, because I had the same listeners here as I do over there at IAW, but. I did say that I probably wasn't going to be doing shows probably until September here on RSB, but I thought, heck, I'm wide awake. I might as well do something. And, well, I missed you guys. I was away all last week, wasn't I? Yeah, I missed a week ago Thursday, and I missed the Monday show. And that's because I was actually sleeping. So, sorry about that. Anyway, you guys have been hearing me talk about those two murderous clowns out of Canada. Yeah, Briar Schmigelski and Cam McLeod. They're the ones that murdered those three hikers in the Foothills, I believe it was, or somewhere around there in the British Columbia Mountains. Well, let me see. Yesterday, it would appear that two bodies have been found in the hunt for the BC murder suspects, believed to be those of Schmigelski and McLeod. Now, officers, they discovered the bodies at approximately 10 a.m. on Wednesday morning, in an area of dense brush about a kilometer from where some items directly linked to the suspects had been previously found a ways back, where a burnt-out SUV connected to the pair had been found 3 weeks ago. What is it with them and burning out vehicles? Is this a third one they burnt out? I don't know. Anyway, it looks like they're dead, so that's good news. This was getting, well, it was insane. Like, it was horrific. Like, people in the area were frightened to death of, you know, like, these guys were wandering around for 2 weeks. They were at large for 2 weeks. And finally, the bodies had been closed. Police are still not verifying that it's these two. But come on, who else could it be? Police dropped heavy hints. For example, they found material close to the bodies that are directly linked to these two murderous clowns. Yeah. Killing three people. They killed a guy from Australia. He was 23 years old. They killed his American girlfriend. She was 24. Their names were Lucas Fowler and China Dees. And 4 days later, he killed 64-year-old Leonard Dick, a professor at the University of British Columbia. Didn't take anything from them. I don't know what they were doing, but they were killing people. So this is a huge closure for us here in Canada, in particular for those in the province of Nova Scotia, Kelly. In particular for those in the province of Manitoba. So they're gone. It's done. It's a done deal. We're just waiting on the autopsy reports to come out. Yeah, like I say, they were found in dense bush, and it would have been an area where it's quite difficult to find anybody. It's difficult terrain. So that's the good news. Anybody who's been listening to this show regularly will know that I've been talking about this quite a bit. I didn't need to put up a slide of them, you know, watch out if you come across these particular individuals. Do not approach. They're armed and dangerous. Well, we don't know if they're armed. They're just killing people. No rhyme, no reason. We can't figure out why. Was this person... These two individuals are killing these people. Oh, well, they're gone. And good riddance to a bad rubbish, I say. And like I said, I don't expect to get a whole lot of traffic in the chat room today because I kind of alluded that I wasn't going to be doing a show, so people might be doing other things, but I do notice that Leo Kuhn is here. Leo Kuhn, thank you so much for being here. Really enjoy having your company here. And I have, let me see, I also have John Doe keeping me company in the studio, so thanks, John, for being here. Now, let me see, let's move on to some news, a little bit of news. Well, first of all, I just want to let you know that I'm going to be talking about Islam today. I have an audio from Dr. Bill Warner that came out about 5 days ago. As a matter of fact, it came out. I think it was Monday it came out. Anyway, and it's when Muslims do not assimilate. And you will notice that when you are in a Christian majority country and there are a minority in the midst, the Islamic minority in particular, they're rather well behaved, aren't they? They're quite willing to try to follow customs and uphold Western values, or so they tell us, right? But they really don't. They're just biding their time. They hate us. They really do. And their whole life is dedicated to not only the Sharia and honoring the Sharia, but in defeating the enemy, which is you and me. We are the kafir. We are the infidel. I came across something, speaking of infidel, I don't know about this. I did find it interesting. Apparently infidel, the true meaning of infidel, it actually means a person that does not subscribe to any religion. They're not atheists or anything like that. They just don't subscribe to any a religion and its formalities. So that is an infidel. But the Muslims took it, I suppose, and ran with it. And, of course, infidel translates as to unbeliever. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I've been looking at this chart that I like to keep handy and see exactly where we are with Islam in our midst. It's pretty daunting when you think about it. How far into how far has Islam reached in? And my apologies, I'm trying to bring up my file here and it keeps jumping on me. Well, the four stages of Islam. And this file, this is from thedailycoin.org, if you want to go and find it. It's written by Tim Brown from Freedom Outpost. Islam is not just a religion. It is a theopolitical doctrine. As implemented under Islamic Sharia law, people should take note that Islam makes attainment of political goals a religious duty, thereby making inseparable the religious from the political. And that is it right there, okay? These are their political goals. It is a religious duty as well. And they cannot separate the religious from the political. Sharia law is their political system. And wherever Islam thrives, a state within a state develops and the existing government and unbelieving, like I said earlier, the kafir, the infidel, culture is rejected. The Islamic minority grows in until it can conquer by political or violent means the established government and replace it with Sharia. And this is we're seeing this. Look at all the countries of, days long ago, and some not too long ago. What's happened to some of these countries where Islam was a minority, and now they are republics. Places like Afghanistan, places like Syria, they are 100% Islamic state now, and it wasn't that way. So there are four stages of Islamic infiltration, and I'm just wondering, where are we in the West at this point? And what countries in particular in the West are at what points, right? Now, I have gone through this list before, but I will reiterate it. And let's go to stage one. Now, this is when Muslims begin moving to non-Muslim countries in increasing numbers. And the beginning of cultural conflicts are visible through, they're visible, they're very subtle, but they're there. And this entails the first migration wave to non-Muslim host country. Appeal for humanitarian tolerance from the host country. Yeah, we've seen that. Attempts to portray Islam as a peaceful and Muslims as victims of misunderstanding and racism. And Islam is not a race. High Muslim birth rates in host countries increase Muslim population. Mosques used to spread Islam and dislike of host country and culture. Calls to criminalize Islamophobia as hate crime. Threatened legal action for perceived discrimination, offers of interfaith dialogue to indoctrinate non-Muslims. Now, okay, we in the West, everywhere, are definitely at stage one. Definitely at stage one. Because Islam is in our midst. It is in our Western countries. And it is very, very, how shall I put this? I don't want to use the word bold. Not yet. Not yet do I want to use that word. But it's getting to the point where they are appealing. What they're doing is that they're appealing to our sensibilities, is what they're trying to do at this point, at stage one. And, of course, you will notice in particular the high Muslim birth rate. Look at what's going on in England. When was it? Was it 2018 or was it 2017 where Muhammad was listed as the most popular name in the United Kingdom? Now, Muhammad comes in various spelling. There are variants to the way you can spell Muhammad. You can spell it M-O-H-U-M-M-E-D, M-O-H-A-M-M. So you get the gist. You can spell Muhammad in various forms. So the British census taker, I suppose, I don't know. Do they have somebody that sits there, you know, and, you know, calls the hospital every day? How many babies did you have? What are the names? And they tally up the list. I don't know how they manage to keep track of it, but I don't know. They have their method. Anywho, the United Kingdom did, I should say the United Kingdom government, noticed that there was an uptick in the name Muhammad. So they decided to play a little fast and loose with the facts. Instead of incorporating Muhammad, as it were, they decided that they were going to dilute it via the various forms of spelling. So I think the name that came out on top was James. Oh, I don't know. Or maybe Nigel. I don't know. But this is another thing. I'm going off on a tangent here. Our Western governments are terrified of Islam. And they will stop at nothing in their appeasement of Islam. And we're only at stage one, people. Stage one. As you know, I hail from Canada. And that bullet point I read off, calls to criminalize Islamophobia as a hate crime. Yeah, it happened in Canada. We ended up with Motion 103. Now, it is not a bill. It was tabled as a motion by Iqbal Khalid. Iqbal Khalid is her name. Iqbal Khalid is a Muslim. She emigrated from, I believe, Pakistan, brought all of her Islamic values with her and her family, and managed to, well, find her way into politics. And we're seeing that too. Look at Canada's immigration minister, Ahmed Hussein, from Somalia. We call him the Somali, a Muslim. And he was, I talked about this on the IAW show, but just to point this out again, Ahmed Hussein really hates us unbelievers, and he is really not hiding that fact. As you know, we're headed into election mode. We have our general election here in October. So a lot of these politicians, they're on the hustings. And Ahmed Hassan attended an event in Toronto, and all of his Muslim minions were gathered around him. And I saw the footage, and yep, it was a kneecap city like you wouldn't believe. And this creature had the nerve to say that you have to get out and vote. You have to get out and vote. And you have to understand that the other parties, they dance with the, what did he say? they dance with the devil sort of thing. It's what he was trying to convey. In other words, that we were not, and I say we as a collective, in that the other parties had no interest in protecting the interests of Muslims in Canada. But we were filthy, 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 filthy coffers, and that the opposing parties, like the Conservative Party of Canada and so on and so forth, in particular the People's Party of Canada, would go out of their way to make lives miserable for Muslims living in Canada. And they danced with unbelievers, and this man was totally unhinged, I think. Or was he? No. He was being a good Muslim. And he was addressing, I'm pretty sure he was within his, he was addressing his constituency in his riding. I'm sure he was in his riding. Anyway, it doesn't matter. This is what he said. This is what he thinks about us. This is what he thinks about Old Stock Canada. There's no room for Old Stock Canada. And, of course, we have witnessed that under the unfortunate leadership of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who also feels that Canadians that do not embrace the concepts of multiculturalism and diversity, well, we're just closed-minded bigots, and we have absolutely no right nor any say in the direction of which Canada is going. And, of course, everybody knows the direction Canada is taking right now. And believe me, it is dire. It's getting more and more dire. Justin Trudeau is playing dirty politics. He is pandering. When he was at the British Columbia Pride Day event, their parade, and he lost no opportunity to speak about the fact that Andrew Scheer, who is the leader of the Conservative Party of Canada, chose not to attend the gay event. Andrew Scheer, okay. A deeply religious man. I think he's got like 5 kids or something like that. The guy goes to church every Sunday. Okay. So I don't think that gay pride parades, not only, you know, they don't fall within his principles, let's put it that way. And he was probably working on his campaign or trying to get the business of the business of the party done. I don't know. But as you know, I don't have much love for Andrew Scheer. I think that he is a liberal light, and I've talked about that in the past. But so I'm just giving you some examples of what we're seeing in Canada. And, of course, we have the Muslim Student Association business going on that was established in universities in the United States. It moved to Canada. It was established in 1963. So we have all of this business going on in our universities. The province of Ontario even has its own Muslim party. That's right. What is it? The Islamic Party of Ontario. And they got their charter, yeah. They will be eligible to run candidates in the next provincial election. And when is the next provincial election? 18, 19, 20. I think it's 2022. I think, yeah, we had our provincial election in 2018. So this is what they're doing. See? That is stage one. Oh, and threatening legal action. Here's another bullet point. And what we're seeing Just in the United Kingdom and in Canada in particular, Canada, with its human rights tribunals, it is nicknamed the Muslim Clause because this is the quasi-judicial system that Muslims use whenever they feel slighted. Now, there was a woman in the United States, and I believe it was a couple of days ago, and I guess she was hurting her kids or something, and she was kind of like, oh, for fuck's sake. And there was this Muslim woman standing nearby, and the Muslim woman was in the full regalia, yes, in the niqab. All you could see were her eyes. And she said, please don't swear like that. And the woman turns around and says, like, who the fuck are you? And so they got into a bit of a Donnybrook over it. It's all on videotape, of course. You cannot leave your house without being taped, okay? We're turning into China in the credit system with these cameras all over the place, all right? Oh, the credit system. Well, anyway. So, well, this happened in the United States. Now, nothing is going to happen to this woman who berated. Well, she didn't berate. She essentially was telling this Muslima, take a hike. And she allegedly told the Muslima to go back to where she came from. Oh, that's just great. That wasn't caught on the video. And witnesses nearby said, no, we didn't hear that. But the Muslima claimed that's what she said. Anyway, now, if that had happened in Canada, you can bet your bottom dollar that that woman would be facing a human rights tribunal at her own expense. She would have to hire her own lawyer who would present her case. She would have to defend herself, right? And the plaintiff, of course, would be this Muslima. All expenses paid, of course. Her lawyer would be paid for her everything from her travel expenses, everything would be paid for by, guess who? Yours truly, the taxpayer. So this is why we call it the, well, it's also referred to as the hurt feelings clause. And I'm just getting a pop-up here. I might get to that in a moment. This is pertaining to that tranny in British Columbia taking all of these poor hapless immigrant women to the tribunal because they wouldn't wax his balls, right? I guess the police had been looking a little closer into this guy, and they found some things about him. What's he go by? Oh, I'll find his name in a moment. I have it on the tip of my brain. I write things down and then I throw the pieces of paper out. Anyway, anybody in the chat room recalls that name, just toss it in there and I'll pass it along. Yeah, and Leah, that's right too. We're white supremacists as well. Exactly. So they can throw every label they want at us, but if we even so much as utter anything along the lines of shut up, mind your own business, and get the hell out of my country, and that is alleged, Human Rights Tribunal for you. And this is very unfortunate, but the Human Rights Tribunal, the ones in Ontario and British Columbia in particular, are terribly successful with a 95% success rate. It is just absolutely unbelievable what the Muslims get away with in terms of punitive damages and another notch in their belt. But all of this is in stage one. Yeah, and I just covered threatened legal action for perceived discrimination. Perceived. And of course, whenever there is an Islamic-inspired attack in Canada or the United States or anywhere in the West, oh, this has nothing to do with Islam. And of course, they join the vigils, and they also hold the little candle of votives, and they sway back and forth and sing "Kumbaya, my lord, Kumbaya." Yeah, you guys know how I feel about vigils. I don't like them at all. Instead of laying flowers, you should be out there doing something about this so that it never happens again. But of course, whenever Islamists attack us, whether it's macheting us to death or beheading us in the streets of the United Kingdom like they did to Fusilier and Lee Rigby a few years back, or they decide that they're going to shoot down a bunch of people in the heart of Greektown, which is in Toronto, or, let me see, take down the World Trade Centers? We implore you. We really implore you. This has nothing to do with Islam. We promise. And that's another thing, too. They always bring the parents out. Eh? The parents are always in tow. Standing beside the imam, of course. Yep, it's all, you know, the imam does all the speaking. Nope, this has nothing to do with Islam. And as the parents are always saying, I had no idea he was up to this. No, we had no idea. Yeah. So how many nations are suffering from Islamic infiltration? Is it one, a handful, nearly every nation? Well, the Islamic leadership of the Muslim Brotherhood and others wish to dissolve each nation's sovereignty and replace it with the global imposition of Islamic Sharia law. Sharia law, based on the Quran, Sirah, and Hadith, condemns liberty and forbids equality and is inconsistent with the laws of all Western nations. So, we're all at risk. Whenever Islam gets a foothold in the West, it starts its machinations, as is taught to them to do. Remember, Muhammad's last command before he died was, kill the unbeliever wherever you find them. Like, don't make friends with unbelievers. And right now, though, we're pretty much at stage one. We're fast. Some countries are fast moving into stage two, and this is the really scary part. Oh, and the rain is pouring down again. Can you guys hear the rain? Listen to that if you can hear it. Wow, look at that. Whew. It's coming down in torrents. Yes, they're commanded within their so-called religion. That is their end goal, is to create the caliphate, to ensure a global caliphate. The religion of peace doesn't mean that we're a peaceful people. The religion of peace means that there will be peace in the land when Islam has conquered all of the lands. And they're doing a damn fine job of it in some countries. The United Kingdom, holy smokes. And, of course, we have dimmy governments that are helping. Holy. I cannot believe the governments that are aiding and abetting this. As some of them are, you know, a little more covert in wanting to keep the peace, but some governments are very overt in that Islam definitely has a place. And, of course, I am referring to the shiny pony, Justin Trudeau, here in Canada, who insists that Islam has a place in Canada. Islam is compatible with the West. And if you criticize Islam, forget it. Do you remember that story I was telling you? Oh, probably, but quite a while back. There, Justin Trudeau was on some sort of tour in the province of Quebec, on a tour. And an older woman, I think she was in her mid-60s, was asking, "When are we going to get our money? When are you going to reimburse us for all the money you took from us to bring in all of these migrants? We're broke. We're broke. Like, and we can't afford this. Are you going to give us our money back?" And he out and out said, "Madam, there is no room for racism here. See, if you criticize Islam, you're a racist." Well, I'm a notorious racist. But what the heck? What am I going to do? Totally, bow to Islam? Like, I do this because this is exactly what I'm trying to prevent. I do not want to submit to Islam. And that is exactly what Islam is. It is. Islam in Arabic is submission. Well, I don't want to submit, and I don't want my country to submit. I'm sure that the United States and the United Kingdom, the people, they don't want to submit. People in France are rising up a little bit, not enough. Maybe it's a little too late, but we just don't want anything to do with Islam. We want Islam gone. We want Islam to leave us alone and go back to their countries where they feel very comfortable in practicing their Sharia, whatever. And I don't care what they do over there, wherever. Saudi Arabia, well, they've conquered pretty much half of Africa. North Africa is completely gone. But whatever they do over there, do it. I don't care. But we don't want it here, and we don't deserve to have it here. I had a father, a grandfather, and uncles that fought in World Wars I and II for my right to live in a peaceful nation as a free citizen. And for all of that to go in naught, I don't think so. I think that's part of what really keeps me going, keeps me motivated to keep speaking out about the issues of Islam, because it is truly a threat. Now, I've gone through a stage one, and I got Gary here. Hi, Gary. Gary, meet Leah Kuhn. Leah Kuhn, meet Gary. Oh, you two know each other from Cross Canada News. That's right. What am I doing? Where am I here for time? Oh my goodness, I'm burning through half the show already. But stage two, I'll just whip through this. I see elements of stage two in here. Stage two, Muslim immigrants and host country converts continue demands for accommodation in employment, education, social services, financing, and courts. Bingo, 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 bingo. Seeing it all. They are the proselytizing increases, establishment and recruitment of jihadi cells, seeing that. Effort to convert alienated segments of the population to Islam, seeing that. Yep, they're really gunning after the loners. You know that? Yeah. They go after the lonely kids that are totally insecure. They pick on the weak, is what they're doing. And this one too, revisionist efforts to Islamize history. We're seeing that in the textbooks, revisionist efforts to Islamize history. You guys remember the world history textbook there in the United States? where a disproportionate amount of time was devoted to the religion of peace, and they had all of these nice things to say about Islam. So that's what they're doing. They're revising their own history. They switch around the hadiths and the sirahs. They go from, see, the Quran is a very tricky book. What they did is that they engaged in a hell of a lot of revisionism, as it were, with that thing. They switched things all around. They abrogated passages. And if you were a layperson and read the Quran, you would think that Islam had evolved, because all the violent passages are at the beginning of the Quran, and then near the end, you get to the more peaceful passages, which is totally not true. That is abrogation to the nth degree. What else do they want to do? Efforts to destroy historic evidence that reveal true Islam. In other words, they want to destroy our scholarly books. That's a big one. They're demanding bans on books. They're demanding that people be removed, for example, from Amazon. People like Dr. Bill Warner and Robert Spencer, demanding that their books not be sold on Amazon, that sort of thing. They are increasing their anti-Western propaganda. Efforts to recruit allies who share similar goals, like communists, anarchists, and might I add, the LGBTQ and Antifa. That the LGBTQ, that one really gets me. I don't mean, you know, gays and lesbians in general. I mean the militants within the LGBTQ. LGBTQ loves Islam. Muslims welcome. It's craziness. And, of course, we've seen the attempts to indoctrinate our children to Islamic viewpoints. You guys are all familiar with visit a mosque a day, a field trip for school children. You've all seen the photographs of non-believer kids bending down, reciting the Shahada, and of course the Shahada is one of the five verses of one of their daily Islamic prayers, and that is the affirmation that there is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is the messenger. And they have these kids, these little kids that are in like grade 4, grade 5, reciting the Shahada. So we've seen that. So yeah, there's a lot of stage 2 elements going on here. There is continued focus on enlarging Muslim populations by increasing Muslim births and immigration. Yes, indeed, I mentioned that earlier. And of course, what did Omar Gaddafi, the former benevolent dictator of Libya, warn us about? He said, we won't have to conquer you by the sword. We'll conquer you by the womb. And they do. They have large families. Yep, they're introducing the blasphemy laws, the use of charities to recruit supporters and fund Islam. Yep, that is the money laundering. They have, they do. They have a lot of fronts. And this is actually how the Muslim Brotherhood was exposed in the United States with the Holy Land Foundation trials there in the 1990s, is that it was discovered that there were real problems with support for Hamas and Hezbollah going on with these Islamic organizations in which they were funneling money to ensure that the Hamas and Hezbollah were well-armed in fighting the Jew in particular. So they have a lot of fronts. And If you can avoid going to any Muslim-owned shop, please do, because when you pay for your purchase, you're also paying the jizya. Because we're the unbeliever. And we contribute to their zakat. And that is the Muslim that pays an honorarium to the mosque. These are monetary, of course. What else is going on? Covert efforts to bring about the destruction of host society from within. And are we ever seeing that? Remember when this business with the mass migration started in Europe in particular, 2015, 2016, it really started in earnest. And all of those people on the beaches with their Muslim welcome placards. By the way, I'm not seeing too many people with that placard anymore. I wonder why. Maybe it's because some of the do-gooders are getting raped. Yeah, Islam loves to rape unbelievers. Absolutely. They're trying to pit us against each other. This is why organizations like Antifa in particular are very useful tools for Islam. That's why the gays for Islam, gays in particular, liberals, are very useful tools for Islam. And you've heard it before, and I'll say it again. Once Islam is through with them, they'll be coming after them too. I'm just looking in the chat room, and Leia Kuhn is saying, yeah, what is happening in Europe is already begun here. Absolutely right, are you, Leia Kuhn? And the clock is ticking, and Gary is agreeing, very true. It may be even be too late to turn it around. Well, if we get 4 more years of Trudeau, you two, by the way, Gary, Leia Kuhn, and myself, we're the 3 Canadians here. And believe me, living in Canada, we can tell you firsthand what we are seeing. So they're pitting us against each other. And, of course, conservatives are really taking it in the chin. And they're being aided and abetted by the government. Like I say, I've already given examples of what Justin Trudeau thinks about conservatives. Speak about Islam poorly, you're a racist. So, yeah, development of Muslim political base in non-Muslim host society. Islamic financial networks fund political growth, acquisition of land. Highly visible assassination of critics aimed to intimidate opposition. Sometimes they kill us. Tolerance of non-Muslims diminishes. A greater demands to adopt strict Islamic conduct. Clandestine amassing of weapons and explosives in hidden locations. Overt disregard, rejection of non-Muslim society's legal system and culture. Efforts to undermine and destroy power base of non-Muslim religions, including and especially Jews and Christians. There's a lot of stage two going on here, people. And Leia Kuhn is right about what we're seeing in Europe. Sweden is falling really fast in particular. If I were a betting person, I don't know who I would lay my money down on. Who will fall to Islam first? Or better yet, before we even get to who will fall, who will engage in civil war first, because this is pretty much going to be the only recourse for these Western countries, is civil war. Sweden is still merrily going about its way, saying that no, the Muslims they're assimilating quite well. Yeah, they rape our grandmothers, and in France, same thing. No, the Muslims are fine. They rape and murder Holocaust survivors, set them on fire, and throw them over balconies. But other than that, things are hunky dory. No worries here. So, reading stage one and stage two. Well, is there a pattern here? What about Theo van Gogh, murdered in the Netherlands for insulting Islam? Organizations of the Islamic Conference demand anti-blasphemy laws through the United Nations. France is set afire regularly by quote-unquote youths, read Muslims. The rise of dishonor killings, Holocaust denial, anti-Semitism, deception are either tenets of Islam. Hatred towards Christians and Jews and Hindus and Buddhists. The pattern for all to see is the rise of Islamic intolerance and the covert cultural jihad to remake host societies into Sharia-compliant worlds, to remove host sovereignty and replace it with Islamic Sharia law. Sharia law that condemns earthly liberty and individual freedom, that forbids equality among faiths and between the sexes, that rejects the concept of nations outside the global house of Islam, that of Dar al-Harb. My apologies, we are the Dar al-Harb. In the West, we are the house of Dar al-Harb. Islam, they are striving to achieve Dar al-Islam in the West. And I'm just looking at the time here. I'm going to pause it there for a moment. And I'll go through this a bit. And by then, I'll be ready to wrap this up. But I'm going to play this audio by Dr. Bill Warner for you right now.
I stand for open questioning of authorities. I stand for honesty, fact-based reasoning, and debate. I oppose all censorship, including hate speech laws. I reject name-calling and insults. I am Bill Warner. Today I would like to talk to you about the question, why don't Muslims assimilate? Now, I've chosen this topic specifically because in Europe, where it's as politically correct as the United States, you're never supposed to criticize Islam, but at least you can ask this question, why don't Muslims assimilate? Well, the short answer is Muhammad and the Quran, but let's go into details here. Let's take the first example of assimilation in Muhammad's life. Muhammad lived in Mecca, created arguments over his God Allah and his supporters, and so they persuaded him to leave town by telling him he had to leave town, and he went to Medina. 5 years later, there was no assimilation but annihilation. Half the town of Medina were three Jewish tribes, and they were annihilated through enslavement and execution and exile. But all the remaining Arabs became Muslims. So this is the ultimate non-assimilation, which is annihilation of the native culture. This is important because, remember, Muhammad is the perfect example of the perfect Muslim, and so therefore this is Sunnah. Now, the execution of the Jews in Medina created something which I call the Doctrine of the Jews, which separates Jews from Muslims. Now, at first, Islam is very friendly towards the Jews, but in Medina, this all changed, and they became annihilated. Annihilation is the ultimate non-assimilation. Now, we see this pattern not only in Medina, but in Turkey, which used to be Christian. North Africa used to be Christian, Egypt used to be Christian, Iraq used to be Christian, and Syria used to be Christian. Whatever happened to these Christian territories, they became Islamic. Again, this is annihilation, not assimilation. But it doesn't just happen to the Christians. Afghanistan used to be Buddhist, Pakistan used to be Hindu, and Malaysia used to be Hindu. But now then, in the ultimate form of annihilation, they are not assimilated. So, the doctrine of Islam includes annihilation, not assimilation. And remember this, because every Muslim you meet is not going to come across as though he wants to annihilate you, but all of Islam has two faces. There's the face of Mecca, which is peaceful enough and kind enough, but then there's Medina, and this happens when they're strong. So what we see is two Islams. There's a strong Islam and a weak Islam. When they're weak, we're happy to be here. We don't have any demands, but when they're strong, they become very assertive to the point of annihilation. Let's look at the Quran and what it says about assimilation. Fight them, the kafirs, until there is no more discord and the religion of Allah reigns absolute. But if they submit, then only fight those who do wrong, that is, those who do not follow the Sharia. Now, is this about assimilation? No, it's about domination. Here's a hadith, Muhammad. I have been ordered to wage war against mankind until they accept that there is no God but Allah and they believe I am his prophet. So in other words, Muhammad says there is to be war until the whole world becomes Islamic. Again, I ask you, is this assimilation? No, it is annihilation. Another hadith. I have been ordered to fight the kafirs until every one of them admits there is only one God and that is Allah and I am his prophet. Again, here we have a doctrine not of assimilation, but annihilation. I call this the law of saturation. When Islam comes in, it's friendly enough, but over enough time, it rules all. And time may take centuries, but ultimately, they do not assimilate, but they dominate. Now, there's only one place where there's been migration that didn't continue and saturated all Islam, and that was with war. There were 700 years of war in Spain. There was war in the Balkans and war in Central Europe. So the only ways that Islam does not dominate is when there's war against it. Now, humanity is a strange concept in the Quran because there really is no humanity. There's only Muslim, the believers, and the kafirs. And what does the Quran say about the kafirs? Well, it says in 12 different verses that a Muslim is never their true friend. Quran 3:28. Believers should not take kafirs as friends in preference to other believers. Those who do this will have none of Allah's protection, will have only themselves as guards. So, believers are not to take kafirs as friends. Well, think about what that means. Is that about assimilation or is that about domination? And here's another hadith. Muhammad said, whoever associates with the kafirs and lives with him, he is one of them. Now, since the kafirs are the worst thing on earth, that is not a good idea, which means it does not lead to assimilation. There's no golden rule, so we don't have something common as an ethical bond between the migrant Muslims. Instead, they have a rule which includes deception. They don't have a golden rule. Golden rule is do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But instead, there's this ethical set for the Muslims and an ethical set for the believers. Then we have Islamic law. It's not about assimilation because the Sharia is to be dominant over all forms of law. And under the Sharia, the kafirs are dhimmis, that is, we're to be subjugated. So there's a doctrine of non-assimilation. The ethical differences between us, the kafirs are hated by Allah, and supposed to be hated by Muslims. Each Muslim has two natures. This doesn't lead to assimilation because it's like, can I trust this guy? Can I trust this lady? And instead we see that all the doctrine is Islam is not here to assimilate but to dominate. The Quran even talks about migration. It says those believers, Muslims, who migrated and made jihad in the cause of Allah and those who gave them asylum, that is those who helped them, they're true believers. So the true Muslims are one who migrate and then create jihad in order to bring about the Sharia. Here's another hadith. Migration cannot be ended as long as there is unbelief or as long as there's an enemy who resists. So migration is forever until we're completely subjugated. The purpose of migration is to create a Sharia society, not an assimilation society. This Sharia civilization must be established in 1,000 small steps, which I call the salami method, one thin slice at a time. Here's an example. In the United States Congress, they were never allowed to wear head coverings. Jews couldn't wear the kippah. But now then that Muslims have been elected to the Congress, now then Muslims can wear the hijab. This is a form of domination, not assimilation. So, Islamic migration sets up the Sharia. It is a rule of saturation where all of the society must become Islamic or at least Sharia compliant. Again, is this about assimilation? No, it is about domination. Now let's move from the theory of Islam to the application of Islam here in America today. One of the head of CARE, the Islamic Civil Rights Group, said this, Muslims can never be full citizens of the United States because there is no way that we can fully be committed to the institutions and ideologies of this country. I mean, how clear can you be? So Muslims don't integrate because we're filthy kafirs. Muslims are our superiors. Islamists have the Sharia. We may keep our constitution, but it can never push against the Sharia. The Sharia always has to dominate. And Islam has dualistic ethics, which means that your neighbor who's a Muslim, can he be trusted? Well, maybe yes, and well, maybe no. And Muslims are commanded to struggle until all the world is Sharia, which means the nation they move into must become a Sharia nation.
And the link to that is right in the show notes, as usual. And I really do want to thank my chat room. I love my chat room because you guys help me out, like, in more ways than one, more than you'll ever know. I was struggling with what exactly the Immigration Minister of Canada, Ahmed Hassan, was saying when he was addressing his drooling, adoring crowd. And he more or less implied that conservatives were dancing with white supremacists. That's it. That's it, Leia Kuhn. So thank you, Leia Kuhn, for that very much. And another sidebar. I said I got an update here, and the person's name that I was trying to relate escaped me. The person I'm referring to, of course, is a trans activist out of British Columbia. His name is Jessica Yanov. His real name is Jonathan Yanov. And I am sorry, but this guy, okay, look, you have a dick, buddy, okay? you're a dude. Anyway, it looks like that he's in quite a bit of trouble because the police are investigating him because there are allegations that he has been dabbling in child pornography, and of course, they're investigating his tweets about having a rather unhealthy fascination with young girls and feminine hygiene products. So this guy who's trying to pass himself off as a woman when it's convenient for him is being investigated. So I'll keep you posted on that too. Not much to do with this, Sam, but let me see here though. There's a really good website out there called thereligionofpeace.com. And they keep track of the number of violent jihad attacks with as best as it can, because good grief, you can't shake a stick without there being another jihad attack somewhere on the planet. So I strongly suggest that you check them out. They're really good. The site lists more than 1,400 attacks since September of 2001. It is worth a visit, like I say. But what is occurring is that is likely inestimable are events where Muslims are bullied by other Muslims for not being Muslim enough, where non-Muslims are intimidated into doing or not doing what they desire, where remnants populations are in a death spiral simply for being non-Muslim in a predominantly Muslim area. Christians, Jews, Hindus, Buddhists, animists, and atheists meet with death, property destruction or confiscation, forced conversion, rape, excessive taxation, the jizya, enslavement, riotous mobs, and various other forms of Islam, injustice, at the hands of Muslims in Sudan, the Philippines, Kenya, Malaysia, India, and on it goes. And let us not forget, death to apostates the world over. And, of course, the Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Durka, durka, durka. So I've gone through stage one and stage two. So what happens when we reach stage three? Open violence to impose Sharia law and associated cultural restrictions, rejection of host government, subjugation of other religions and customs. intentional efforts to undermine the host government and culture, acts of barbarity to intimidate citizens and foster fear of submission. Well, we saw that in the United Kingdom with the child sexual exploitation gangs, which they nearly got away with if it weren't for independent journalists, you know, people like Tommy Robinson that exposed this. And the authorities, they knew it was going on, and when the light was shone upon them, the glaring light, they had nowhere to hide. So we're seeing aspects of stage three in some European countries in particular. All opposition is challenged and either eradicated or silenced. Mass execution of non-Muslims. Widespread ethnic cleansing by Islamic militias. Rejection and defiance of host society's secular laws or culture. Murder of moderate Muslim intellectuals who don't support Islamization. Destruction of churches, synagogues, and other non-Muslim institutions. Women are restricted further in accordance with Sharia law. Large-scale destruction of population, assassinations, and bombings. Toppling of government and usurpation of political power and imposition of Sharia law. So some of these elements are already popping up in, like I say, some Western countries. And just it's just getting to the point. The intimidation factor is daunting. It truly is daunting. You know what really annoys me? Is the government, our current governments, our secular governments, telling us to relax, take it easy. Don't worry, the Muslims aren't really a threat, but maybe stay out of certain neighborhoods. And ladies, don't walk around alone at night in certain, you know, areas. Things like that. They tried to cover up, where was it, in Germany? New Year's Eve? Was that New Year's, 2017 leading into 2018, the Tishera that was going on? And the Tishera is when a group of Muslim males corner a woman and gang rape her. That was happening. German authorities tried to cover that up, but they couldn't. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the day of the internet. And believe me, we can find all of this information. This has been going on for God knows how long. But we have the tools right now to not only educate ourselves about the ambitions of Islam, but to do something about it. And we have to stop being afraid to speak out. They'll try to silence you, but what if, you know, what are they going to do with me? With, you know, my little radio show? What are they going to throw me in jail? Oh, well, who knows? God only, who knows? But what about stage four? Yeah. Stage four, Islam becomes the only religious, political, judicial, cultural ideology. Sharia becomes the law of the land. All non-Islamic human rights canceled. Enslavement and genocide of non-Muslim population. Freedom of speech and the press eradicated. All religions other than Islam are forbidden and destroyed. Destruction of all evidence of non-Muslim culture, populations, and symbols in countries, the Buddhists, the houses of worship, art, etc. And we, of course, witnessed that with Islamic State, ISIS, when they were running rampant in Afghanistan, and how they destroyed all of those Buddhist temples that had been standing there for decades, for like over 1,000 years. I couldn't put a date on it, but people are being genocided too, you know? And it is very disgusting that our governments feel that it is fine. Let the Muslims do what they want. Well, you know, the thing is too, and I've talked about this, I don't think the governments are necessarily fine, but our Western governments, they cannot be this stupid. I think what it is that the government is afraid. Our governments, they're afraid of Islam, because it is. Any criticism of Islam is met with a violent response, always. Always, right down into what happens in the United States. I remember Pamela Geller when she hosted the Draw Muhammad Day in Garland, Texas. Well, there are Muslims who traveled with the sole purpose of kidnapping and beheading her. And they had to be shot by armed security. Private security that Pamela Geller had to hire. And the genocide. I don't know if you are aware, but today marks the 5th anniversary of the genocide of the Yazidis in Iraq that was carried out by the Islamic State of Iraq. And it's recognized by the United Nations. But did any of our leaders have anything to say about it? Did Justin Trudeau say anything about it? Absolutely not. Of course not. That would scare the... It would be impossible for him to say anything. There goes his voting base. And God help Canada if we end up with another Trudeau government. If he's voted back in, it will be a victory for him, and he won't go away. Jordan Peterson said it perfect. Justin Trudeau, although he's, you know, he's a citizen of Canada, he can run for office. That's his right as a citizen, but he should not have. I truly believe that. So we've gone through the 4 stages of Islamic conquest. Now, the House of Islam, meaning peace, Dar al-Islam, includes those nations that have submitted to Islamic rule, to the soul-crushing, liberty-condemning, discriminatory law of Sharia. The rest of the world is in the House of War, or Dar al-Harb, because it does not submit to Sharia and exists in a state of rebellion or war with the will of Allah. No non-Muslim state or its citizens are innocent and remain viable targets of war for not believing in Allah. The Christians, the Jewish, the Coptic, the Hindu, the Zoroastrian peoples of the world have suffered under subjugation for centuries. The Dhimmi-esque are forbidden to construct houses of worship or repair existing ones, economically crippled by the heavy jizya tax, my apologies. Socially humiliated, legally discriminated against, criminally targeted, and generally kept in a permanent state of weakness, fear, and vulnerability by Islamic governments. It should be noted that forced conversions, as we saw in Egypt, and slavery, as we're seeing in Sudan, are still reported. Homosexuals have been hung in the public square in Iran. Young girls are married to old men. apostates are threatened with death. Honor killings are routine. Women are legally second-class citizens, although the Muslim males, they insist they're treated better than in the West. These more obvious manifestations may distract from some less obvious ones, such as the lack of intellectual inquiry in science, narrow scope of writing, all but non-existent art and music, sexual use and abuse of youth and women, and the disregard for personal fulfillment, joy, and wonder. Look into the eyes of a recently married 12-year-old girl to see the consequences of the moral deprivation spawned by Islam. And there you go. And that pretty much concludes the show for today. I want to thank you once again for being here. Thank you to Leia Kuhn and Gary and John Doe and 9357. Thank you guys for keeping me company. Like I say, there's still quite a bit under the weather, making a little progress, but it's two steps forward and one step back right now. Hopefully I will have a show on Monday. The RFB shows always tape Mondays and Thursdays at 2 p.m. Eastern time. But if you don't get your alert, it's because I'm either sleeping in the hospital or I've lost power. Okay? Those would be the reasons. But that is it. I am out of racetrack. Guys, be vigilant out there. Be very vigilant. And don't be afraid to speak out, despite Justin Trudeau trying to label you as a racist in Canada. You know, I'm still really mad at George W. Bush after 9/11. He went to the rubble in New York City, and he stood there at a podium with devastation all around him and had the audacity to say, this has nothing to do with Islam. Don't believe it. These attacks that we see, the jihad attacks that we see, has everything to do with Islam. These are the good Muslims. The good Muslims are ensuring that the commands of Muhammad are indeed carried out. You guys take good care of yourselves, take care of others. Hopefully, I'll see you Monday.